Please help me welcome Ryan P., who will be introducing our speaker.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What a beautiful group of people. I'm Ryan Pickle, and I am an addict. You ever meet somebody that when, before the first word gets said, you just feel locked into them? I've got that with this guy. We met in Lumberton, Mississippi at a retreat. We get to go there every year together. As that relationship has grown, as we've spent time together, we've been able to do things outside of that. We text each other every single solitary day. We're halfway in a race between who gets to text first. But this is the first guy that I've met in a very long time to have that kind of a lock with instantly. The guy who's at his very core feels the same way that I do. Every time I get to lay my arms around the man's neck is a treasure for me. I'd like to introduce you guys to Lou.
All right.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm an addict. My name's Lou. I am very grateful to be clean today through the grace of God and the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm nervous. This is a bucket list kind of thing for me. You know, my first time that I ever went to an NA function was in our area. We have a spiritual retreat that celebrates recovery in the Pensacola area, and what's called the Howl. And I remember going to that retreat and being blown away just by being there. And the Sunday morning speaker was a spiritual speaker. And I remember the first few years I went, it was like, man. And these were all local guys with lots of time and lots of recovery. And I remember thinking, man, someday I wish I could get to do that. 3 years ago, I was asked to do that. And that blew my mind, you know. And I guess I've always wanted to do this, you know. But I had a couple of people this weekend say, what kind of spiritual message are you going to give us? And, you know, the reality of it is I don't know how spiritual I am, but I sure try to be. You know, this is a spiritual program. My recovery is all about my spiritual journey. You know, I don't share a whole lot about my using. We all know how to do that, you know, but I do like to qualify myself as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I grew up in a military family, and we traveled a lot, so I never had roots. I was always the new kid. I was always felt like I was outside looking in. And that was hard for me. You know, I don't know if that's where the less than came from, but that feeling of not belonging came from there. And I spent a lot of time lonely. You know, and I never was able to develop any deep friendships. And I do know, though, through step work, where the not good enough comes from. I was in the fifth grade, and you know, I grew up with a mechanical engineer and a pilot for a father and a nurse for a mother, and of course they had high expectations of me. And I remember the first time, it was in the fifth grade, and I made the AB honor roll. And I was so proud of myself. And I remember coming home with that report card and going and showing it to my mom. Oh, Lou, that's so good. I'm so proud of you. But my dad was the one that mattered. My dad was my hero. And he came home from work, sat down in his chair, and I went up to him and I handed him my report card. And I said, Dad, I made the AB honor roll. And he picked it up and he looked at it. And he looked at me and he said, that's good, Lou, but it should have been all A's. And I realized today that, you know, it was like you took a machete and cut me off at the knees. You know, and I spent the rest of my life trying to be good enough. You know, and unfortunately spent too much of that time saying to hell with being good enough. I didn't care because I never would be. And I hated myself. I was in a lot of I had a lot of emotional pain my whole life. And then I found substances. I got high the first time when I was 12. And I was like, oh wow, this is how I'm supposed to feel? This feels good. Because I didn't feel like Lou. I felt good. I felt comfortable. I felt okay. And I spent the next 35 years chasing that feeling. You know, I was a functional addict for a very long time. You know, you know, let me stop for a minute. I need to thank the committee from this convention for inviting me up here. You know, I've been to a number of conventions and never one like this. Never one like this. What an amazing job. I met some amazing people. I've never been in a clean time countdown with 24 years clean where I was over there.
Right.
Okay? That's awesome. You know, and I thank my predecessors for being here. Thank you for carrying the message for me and to me and teaching me how to live and believing in me and showing me unconditional love. That's so important. But anyway, like I said, I used for a long, long time, and it worked for quite a while. You know, it numbed the pain. That was my go-to for all my emotions. Happy use, sad use, angry use, celebrate use. That was my go-to. That was my solution to everything, was to get high. And then it stopped working. And what I realized is when it stopped working, it started increasing the pain. And it hurt more and more every day. Every hit hurt more and more. I couldn't even enjoy what I was doing because I was worried about where I'm going to get my next one. And it made me want to die. But I didn't have the guts to put a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger. So I kept trying to do it every day with drugs. You know, and for whatever reason, God saw fit to keep me alive. And I remember, I really don't like to think about this too much, but I remember being at a using buddy's house and taking a big old blast and having a seizure in the middle of his living room floor. And when I came out of that seizure, my first conscious thought was I want another hit. And something clicked in my brain. I don't know what it was. Well, today I realize it was God. But, you know, it was, Lou, something's wrong here. You've got to do something. And, you know, I'm the only addict in my family. I have three younger brothers and a baby sister. None of them are addicts. Just me. And I think part of that might have been for, you know, I realize today that my parents made most of their mistakes with me because I was their first child. You know, and I had a lot of resentment that I had to deal with over that because everything seemed to be a whole lot easier for my younger brothers and my baby sister. My baby sister got away with everything. But you know, they had no. I mean, they knew that I drank and they knew that I smoked weed, but they didn't know about the other stuff. They had no clue. I was able to hide it. You know how good we are at hiding it. or how good we think we are at IU. That morning, I didn't know what to do, and I called my brother. He was the only one of my family, of my siblings, that was still in living where I was. And I said, "Man, I need help." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm really fucked up. I need help. I don't know what to do. I want to die. I can't stop using." And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm smoking crack, and I can't stop. And everything I have is gone. What do I do? Help me." And he didn't really know what to do, but he loved me. He's my brother. And so he came and he got me, and he took me to his house, and he made some phone calls. And he got in touch with somebody that he knew was, actually it was the priest at the church that I grew up in. And he called him because he was in recovery. And the priest told my brother to bring me to him. We went to his office and he talked to me and he asked me what was going on. And I told him, I said, "I want to die. I can't keep doing this anymore. I can't live with the pain." And he said, "Okay." And so he called the local detox facility and got me in there. And my drug of choice was not one that's medically detox necessary. But I spent 9 days in that detox facility. You know, and back then, my clean date is 6/12/01. I realize today that that's the most important date in my life because that's really when my life started. But anyway, I went into that detox facility, and at that time they drew blood. They didn't do urinalysis, they drew blood. I was coming off a 13-day run with no sleep. I slept for the first 47 hours I was there. When I finally did wake up, the nurse came in and told me, we were really worried about you. We thought we were going to have to send you to the hospital. The lab called us because when they did your tox screen, you had enough drugs in your system to kill 4 people. And I was like, "Well, and?" You know, and? But, you know, something happened to me when I was there. You know, I came to the realization that I really needed to do something. Really needed to do something different. And in that particular detox facility, there was no Narcotics Anonymous literature in there. But there was AA literature in there. And I remember picking up the book and reading it and saying, I can sort of relate to that. But that's just not really me. And they actually brought in an H&I meeting, AA did. And I went to that meeting and I said, I can sort of relate to that. But that's, you know, but something just was off a little bit. It just wasn't, you know, wasn't me. And I met a guy in there, and I'm a disabled veteran, and I met a guy in there that was a veteran as well. He said, "You know, the VA's got a treatment center over in Gulfport." And I said, "Real, for veterans?" And I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "And it's for free." And I was all, "Oh yeah, free? I'm all about free." And so I went to that. I had to go, you know, and go through a screening at the VA in Pensacola. And I remember sitting in the psychologist's office, and she talked to me, and I was at a point where it wasn't any use for me to lie anymore. You know, I mean, I needed to be honest as I could. She picked up she said, "Yeah, you qualify." So she picked up the phone and she called over there, and this was, originally, I got clean in 1999. Okay, this was in December of 1999. She She called over there and hung up the phone, and she said, "I got good news. I got a bed for you." And I said, "Okay, great." And she said, "On January 6th. And I said, "Oh no, I need to go now. I'm sitting right here in your office and I want to get high. I can't do that. I can't stay clean. I can't not use." Because one of the conditions was that I go in there and have a clean drug screen when I went in there. I said, "I can't do that. I got to go now." And she reached in her desk drawer and she pulled out this little Narcotics Anonymous meeting list. And she said, "They have meetings in Fort Walton Beach. And if you go to these meetings, these people will help you stay clean." And I was like, "Yeah, right." But I was desperate enough. I took it. I was in enough pain that I took that meeting schedule. And I walked into my first meeting. And I have never, ever forgotten the first time I walked into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and sat down. I sat down there, and of course at the meeting they said, "Is anybody here for their first NA meeting? Would you please tell us your first name? This is not meant to embarrass you, but so for us to get to know you." And I opened my mouth and I said, "My name's Lou and I'm an addict." And something happened to me when those words came out of my mouth. A weight came off of me. You know, God was there. And, there was only probably 15 or 20 people in that meeting, and Fort Walton Beach is not a big town, and I used there for a lot of years, and I thought I knew everybody that got high in Fort Walton. Because I had gotten dope and used with so many different people. But there was all these people, and I didn't know a single one of them. And I remember walking out of that meeting and thinking, "How in the hell do you people know me? You know me. You were talking about me the whole time. You were talking about what I was afraid of. You were talking about, you know, what I did, what I didn't know how to do. You were talking about me." And it took me a little while to thinking about it to realize that, well, you were talking about me, but you were sharing about yourselves. And that was probably my first hope shot in many, many years. You know, I truly believed that I was going to die in a dope house or a gutter with a needle sticking out of my arm, and I believed that I deserved it. And you told me that I didn't. And I got enough hope to go back to the next meeting the next night. And I walked into that meeting, and I actually saw somebody that I used to use with. And I always wondered what happened to him. I thought he died. You know, and so I went to meetings every day. Y'all told me that I had to get a sponsor. And I was like, "What the hell's a sponsor? What do I do with that?" You know, my idea of a sponsor was, you know, when I was little, the March of Dimes used to have the walks where you'd go and you'd get people to sponsor you for 25 cents a mile. And, you know, and you go every mile that you walk, they would give you 20. So that was my idea of a sponsor. And I had no idea. And this guy that I was talking to after the meeting said, "No, a sponsor is somebody that will help you learn about recovery and will guide you through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous." And I said, "What do you mean the 12 steps?" I didn't know anything. I was, you know, and a lot of the stuff that I heard went right over my head. Part of that was because I was too foggy, you know, but I stayed clean. I went to treatment, and, you know, I found out in treatment that the good thing for me about treatment was it got me out of the environment that I was in, got me in a safe place, and it got me with people that helped me to start looking at myself and looking at my problem. You know, what I realized today, and I don't say this to knock treatment at all, because for me it really helped. You know, but people spend thousands of dollars to go to treatment to find out meetings are free. Right. You know, and I got out of treatment, and I went back. My sponsor actually picked me up from the the VA where the bus dropped me off, and we went to a meeting. You know, and I was told, when I got clean, it was like no bullshit NA, okay? Sit down, shut up, listen, because you don't know nothing about recovery. The only time we want to hear from you is if you tell us you want to use, and then shut up and listen to the solution. And I didn't like that. I'm a grown-ass man. What do you mean tell me shut up? You know? But I did, because I was scared. You know, I still had a lot of fear. You know, and I got a sponsor. And it was really, there again, that was a God thing. You know, I kept hearing it at meetings almost every day. And the third meeting I went to, there was this guy in there. And he shared, and he was on fire. For me, he was anyway. I mean, I got that. I was like, oh, God, I want what he's got. It's him. Do you think I went and asked him after the meeting to sponsor me? Hell no. You know, I was too scared to do that. What would somebody like him, somebody that had some recovery, want to do, wasting their time with a piece of shit like me? And of course I didn't. And so I went to the meeting. But on the way home, I remember telling myself, okay, Lou, you got to do this. If he's at the meeting tomorrow night, you will ask him to sponsor you. So I go to the meeting the next night, and who's the first person I see when I walk in the door? Did I go up and ask him to sponsor me? No. I waited till after the meeting, till the last possible moment, when he walked to his car, and I ran over there, and I was like, Charles, maybe do you think maybe you could sponsor me? I really need a sponsor. And he looked at me, he turned and he looked at me, and he put his arm on my shoulder, and he said, Lou, I'd be honored to be your sponsor. And wow. Somebody actually told me that I mattered, that he would be honored to help me. And, you know, he kept it pretty simple for me at the beginning. Go to meetings, call me every day, and don't use. Pretty simple. Get a basic text, and I want you to start reading. And I did not start working the steps immediately. Which was probably a good thing for me, because I was still fuzzy. I mean, even though I'd been to treatment and learned some stuff, you know, it took me probably a good 3 or 4 months before my brain cleared enough to where I could actually understand what I was hearing and what I was reading and you know, what y'all were sharing about. I could feel it, but I didn't understand. You know, I'll never forget this day. I woke up in the morning, and he taught me to develop a routine in the morning. So I would wake up, I would pray, I would read the Just for Today, I would go down and sit down by the water and just be. And I woke up one morning, I guess I had about 3 months clean, and I woke up and the first conscious thought I had was, I want to get high. And it turned into that obsession. I mean, it just got stronger and stronger, and I prayed, and that didn't help. And I read my literature, and that didn't help. I read Just for Today, and that didn't help. I sat by the water, and that didn't help. And I said, to hell with it, I'm going to go get high. So I walked in the house, and right where the phone was, there was a cork board on the wall. And on that cork board, I had put my NA meeting schedule. But I had it backflipped, so all the numbers were there. And so I looked at the number, I looked at the list, I looked at the phone. I looked at the list, I looked at the phone. I looked at the list, and I picked up the phone, and I called my sponsor. And he said, what's up? You don't normally call me. This was like 6:30 in the morning. You don't normally call me this early. I want to get high. And he said, why? What happened? I said, I woke up. And he said, okay, I said, I've done my morning routine. I've done all the things you taught me to do, and it won't go away. I need help. I want to get high. I almost called the dope man. And he said, you think you can stay clean for 10 minutes? And I said, yeah, probably. Why? And he said, I'm going to come get you. And I said, you better hurry. You know, and about 8 minutes later, my phone rang, and it was him. And he said, I've got to stop on the way and pick somebody up. They need help. Or somebody needs help. And in my brain, it's automatically, oh, well, they're more important than me. And he said, no, you're coming with me. And I said, oh, no, I'm not. Got to my house, and I got in the car, and I said, where are we going? And he said, a guy I used to sponsor called me for help. And he's been using for the last 3 weeks, and he needs help. And we're going to help him. And I'm like, oh, hell no, we're not. I'm not going to help somebody when I want to get high. And so we stopped and we picked somebody else up, which is really a good thing. Because when we got to that guy's house, I did not want to get out of the car. And I got out of the car, my sponsor was in front of me, I was in the middle, and the other guy was behind me, so I couldn't run. Okay, and so I went on my first 12-step call not knowing what it was. And we walked in the house, and I remember sitting in that living room shaking. And I don't know if it was from fear or for wanting to still get high. You know, I'm thinking in my head, I don't want to help this guy, I want to get high with him. And my sponsor went back in the bedroom and talked to this guy, and he was back there for about 5 minutes or something, and they both came walking out. And I took one look at that guy's face, and I saw the look, I saw the eyes. I saw me looking back, or him, me looking at myself. And that brought all that pain back, and you know what? The desire to use left me. That was God. And I'm not going to tell you it hadn't been back, but in that moment, the desire to use left me. I did not want to get high. I didn't want to go back to the pain that I saw him in. So, that really helped me. And my sponsor told me, he said, there's only six things that you need to do every day. Don't use no matter what. Go to meetings, read the literature, pray, work the steps, and help somebody else. And those things still hold true for me today. You know, when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I really did not come to NA to stop using dope. I love being high. I love getting high. I just couldn't handle the pain and the consequences. I remember being real, I didn't like the word God at all. I was raised in a church-going family, and the God that I was raised or that I learned about was a damning, condemning God that I was supposed to be afraid of. And yet I heard that I was supposed to seek God in Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't want to do that. I did not like that idea. I was very angry at God. How could God let me do the things that I did to the people that loved me the most when I was in my active addiction? How could God let that happen? And, I came to realize that God kept me alive long enough to bring me to Narcotics Anonymous, so Narcotics Anonymous could bring me back to God. And I'm going to steal this from my favorite speaker. If the word God scares you, buckle up. Because you can get with God now, you can get with God later, but you got to get with God. Whoever your God is. And that's one of the things that I love about Narcotics Anonymous is it's my God. It doesn't have to be yours, and yours doesn't have to be mine, and we fiercely defend that. This is a spiritual program, not a religious program. And I used to be sorry to say that I would interrupt people for sharing about religion in meetings. I don't have an issue with it today. I'll interrupt you in a heartbeat. Because this, you know, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. You know, my disease wants me dead, but it'll sell for me loaded, because when I'm loaded, I'm killing myself one, you know, a little bit at a time. So I got really involved, you know. I got in the middle of the boat. Y'all told me to do that. I got in the middle of the boat. And there was no meeting at on Sunday nights in Fort Walton Beach. And I used to complain to my sponsor that I had to drive, you know, 40 miles to Pensacola to go to a meeting. He said, "Well, why don't you start one?" And I said, "Oh, okay." And he said, "Oh, wait a minute now. Hold on. You know, here I got like, you know, 3, 4, 5 months clean maybe." And he said, "You have to make a commitment for a year to open that meeting if you're going to start a meeting." And I was like, "Oh, maybe I ought to think about that." But it was on my heart to do that, and I did. I started a meeting, and probably the first 2-3 weeks that I was there, nobody came. And I said, "What do I do? You know, can I close it up at 7:30? No. Why not? How would you feel if you closed it up at 7:30 and an addict that needed a meeting came 7:35 and that meeting was closed and they went out and used and died? How would that make you feel?" "Yes, sponsor." "Okay." He said, "Let me make a suggestion for you. Take your step work with you." And I was like, "Oh God." So yeah, but it was really good, because I spent that time doing step work. You know, and I did not want to do step work. You know, I didn't want to look at me. You know, early in my recovery, there were a lot of days when I would think to myself, and I'd call my sponsor and I'd be whining and complaining, "I didn't get clean to feel like this. I got all these feelings and I didn't get clean to feel like this." And he would chuckle, and I hated it when he chuckled. And he'd say, "Lou, that's exactly why you got clean, so you could feel again." And I said, "What do I do with them?" He said, "Just feel. Just walk one foot in front of the other. And feelings aren't facts. They will, and they're going to change. Good, bad, or indifferent, they're all going to change." And so I celebrated a year clean. And I got into, I met her. Okay, and she wasn't one of us, okay? She was a nurse that worked at the facility that I was doing maintenance work at. And we started dating, and I guess we've been seeing each other a couple months, and she said, "Why do you go to those meetings all the time? You go almost every day. And you call that guy every day. You spend more time on the phone with him than you do with me. And, you know, look at what you got. You got a good job. You got a nice car. You got nice clothes. You got money in the bank." And me, my addict brain is like, "Oh, hell yeah, you're right. I got this. I don't need that shit anymore." And so the relapse process started. Okay, and I feel real strongly about this. You know, I hear so many times when I go to meetings today, I hear people that are new talking about, "Oh, I relapsed," and then 3 days later, "Oh, I relapsed again." Now, bullshit, you just used. You know, the basic text, the chapter in the basic text is not titled Relapse and Recovery. It's titled Recovery and Relapse for a reason. In order for me to have a relapse, I have to have some recovery. Okay? I got to have some recovery. And the relapse for me is that process that I go through from when I quit working my program till I pick up dope. When I pick up dope, the relapse is over. Then I'm just using. You know, and that's what happened with me. You know, I stopped going to meetings every day. And it was a gradual process. You know, the disease didn't just jump out there and grab me and say, oh, you're good. Go use. Didn't happen like that. I stopped going to meetings every day. Went to 5 a week, 3 a week. Stopped calling my sponsor every day. Put the pen down. Didn't hit my knees every morning when I got out of bed. You know, and after about another couple months, I ran into an old buddy of mine at the grocery store. And he said, man, where you been? You haven't come to my house in like 6 months. And I said, I got clean, man. I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I got recovery. And he said, well, you know, my mom has asked about you a lot. Why don't you come by and see her? And so I did. I said, but it's got to be in the daytime. Yeah. You know, because we didn't use that. We didn't party there until mom went to bed at 7 o'clock at night. So I went by and I saw his mom, and everything was cool. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm good. I'm great. And then a couple days later, my girlfriend and I got in a fight. And I said, well, let me go see how James is doing. I bet I can just go in there and I'll be okay. You know, and so I knocked on the door and he said, oh, hey, Lou, how you doing? It's so good to see you again, man. 10 minutes later, I was high. You know, and I said those two words that we all say before we pick up again. Fuck it. Okay? Well, that's me anyway. You know, I laugh sometimes at myself because I thought that I could just use that one night and it would be done. Okay? Because I went to a meeting the next night and I picked up a white tag. You know, and I didn't use for like 4 days, 5 days. And then the weekend came and I had a bunch of money in my pocket. And then I had to go and pick up another white tag. And then it finally got to the point where I just F it. You know, I even went from Fort Walton to Pensacola one time to pick up a white tag so the people in Fort Walton wouldn't know I was using again. Yeah, like they didn't know. You know, I heard somebody tell me earlier in my recovery, if you're not in there, you're out there. If you're not in here, you're out there. You know, and I didn't really understand what that meant. I do today. So anyway, I just said to hell with it for about 4 months. And it got worse, a whole lot quicker. And I had heard people tell me about that too. The disease never stops. You know, it keeps on going. And it's like you never stopped using. And when you pick up again, you'll be worse than you were before. Well, it wasn't like that the first few days, the first few times. But it quickly got that way. And I remember calling my sponsor. And I was so pissed off at him because he didn't come save me. You know, you tell me you love me, but you just let me out there use. You didn't come save me. And I called him and told him, hey, man, I need help. And he said, okay, where you at? And I told him where I was at. And he said, okay, I'll be there in a little bit. And he and two other addicts came. You know, I learned the hard way that you don't do a 12-step call on your own. I remember this was before I relapsed, and I ran into this other guy, and he was, you know, messed up, and he said, man, can you come and talk to me? And so I went to his house, dope on the table, and he's high, and I'm sitting there talking to him. He said, man, tell me about recovery. Tell me, you know. And so I shared what little bit I had, And I left, and I made it out of there clean. And I was so proud of myself that I did that, and I went to a meeting, and I shared about what I did. And this really good friend of mine was sitting right next to me. As soon as I stopped sharing, he said, "I'm an addict, my name's Al. What the hell do you think you were doing?" You know, and I'm grateful today that people called me on my shit. You know, it was not pat me on my ass or pat me on my back. It was slap me in my face when I got clean. You know, if you don't want to do what we're doing, there's the door. Go get you some more. We'll be here when you get back, if you get back. You know, and one of the things that I struggle with some days in our fellowship is that it seems to have gotten softer. But, you know, that's me. I love Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I'm old school. I guess that's probably the best way to say it. But anyway, I came back. My sponsor said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "I got to do something different." He said, "Well, why don't you go into a halfway house?" And I said, "Oh, hell no. I'm not going to go be one of those halfway house boys that you know, bring their paper to get it signed at the meeting. I'm not going to do that." And he said, "Well, what are you going to do? You need to do something different." I was like, "Okay. All right, I'll call the guy and I'll talk to him." So I called the guy, and he said, I was talking to him, he said, "I only got one question for you. Are you willing to do whatever you have to do to stay clean?" And I thought about that, and it was like it hit me right in the face. Whoa. Am I willing to do whatever I have to do to stay clean? And yes, I am. And he said, "Come on." And that was one of the best things I ever did. I went to that halfway house. You know, a 48-year-old man with guys a lot younger. Most of the guys were a lot younger than me. And got this set of rules and had a curfew and all this stuff that I did not want, all these rules that I did not want to follow. Hell, I had to get up and clean the bathroom before I went to work. What the hell? Well, it's got to be, I can't do it when I get home. It's got to be clean in the morning. Damn it. But you know what? I realized today that was, like I said, the best thing that I could have done, because it taught me accountability. It taught me to be responsible for myself and responsible for my recovery. I went to a meeting every day. So some days, you know, I went to, whenever there was a meeting, I was there if I wasn't working. You know, I went to a meeting every day for the first 3 years that I was clean, except for 2 days. And those 2 days I was too sick to get out of bed. But because that was the only place I felt safe. The only place I really felt safe was in a meeting. You know, and I spent a lot of time, my only people were people in NA and recovery. You know, and I was scared of the old timers. You know, I was real scared because why would they want to, you know, I've only got 6 months clean. I've only got a year clean. Why, you know, they don't want me hanging around. But my sponsor always told me, "Lou, you got to hang with the winners. They're not going to come after you. You got to go after them. Just like you have to do with your recovery. I can't sit down over there next to Dickie and absorb his recovery. I got to do it myself." You know, and there was this, our old timer in Pensacola, who's no longer with us. Every time he shared, I would cringe. "Work the steps. It's all about the steps. Work the steps. It's all about the steps." I did not want to hear that. I didn't want to hear it at all. "Pray." I didn't want to hear that. I still struggled a little bit with the God thing, but I was getting better with it. And he kept saying that every single time he shared. And I'm thinking to myself, why the hell does this guy keep doing it? Now, he's got 28 years clean. Why the hell does he keep doing this? Why does he say that all the time? And it's all about love. And then I realized when I had 5 years clean, I was saying that shit. Because I did it. You know, I did not want to go back to where I was. You know, and so I started working steps. You know, I worked traditions. I continue to work steps today. I continue to work traditions today. You know, I've worked the concepts. You know, and there's people, new people in my area sometimes that they say, Lou, why do I see you at meetings all the time, you know, 3 or 4 days a week? Why do I see you at meetings all the time? Well, why do you think that you see me at meetings all the time? But yeah, you don't need meetings. You've been clean 24 years. I said, why the hell do you think I've been clean for 24 years? Because this is what works for me. I do it because that's what works. That's the program in Narcotics Anonymous. And I do it because if I don't go to meetings, I don't hear the message. You know, I can think of no meeting that I have ever been to where I did not hear something I needed to hear. And most of the time, I didn't realize I needed to hear it until I heard it. And if I wouldn't have been there, I wouldn't have heard it. You know, and if you're new, don't think that what you share is not important. I learn as much from people with a year clean as I do from people with 4 years clean. You know, but it took a long time for me to realize that. You know, and I'm grateful that this is a process, that this is a journey I'm on, and it's not a trip. You know, because I don't have a destination. Well, I do have an ultimate destination. You know, Jimmy shared about it last night. I want to die clean. I want to die with my disease and not as a result of it. You know, and I'm so grateful that when I got clean, a lot of the drugs that there are today weren't there. Okay? If I'd had to deal with fentanyl, I wouldn't be standing here today. Because I know me. You know, I don't use until I can't use no more. I mean, I used until I couldn't use no more, till the money ran out, or till I passed out. And that's not the case today. You know, I realized through step work how important God is in this process for me. You know, and I didn't want to hear the word God, and I remember somebody sharing in a meeting. There again, I was in a meeting and I heard this. If you have a problem with the word God, don't think about it as the God that you grew up with. Think about it as good orderly direction. Ooh, I might could do that. You know, and if you have a problem with your God, pray to mine. Even if you don't know what it is, just pray. You know, and if you keep doing this, if you do this and you keep doing it and you keep doing it, God's going to reveal himself to you. And that's my experience. You know, and I realize today that without God, I wouldn't be clean. I would not be clean. You know, I have a God that, you know, the steps say God as we understood him. And there's a lot of times that I don't understand God. And I don't know why things happen the way they do. But the saving grace for me is that I have a God that understands me and gives me what I need on a daily basis. Does he give me what I want? No. Because 9 times out of 10, what I want is not good for me. You know, but he always gives me what I need. You know, he gives me courage. I live in his grace today. I'm not nervous anymore. And it's all because of God. You know, spiritual principles. You know, I knew up here in my head what spiritual principles are because I learned about them when I was in school. I could read the definition, but I didn't know what the hell to do with them. You know, I remember thinking when I first got clean, thinking that, man, somebody with 90 days clean, they're God. I can't do that. And then when I had 90 days clean, I thought I was God. Because I'd read the basic text and I knew it. You know, I'm real grateful that God is patient and kind and forgiving. You know, one of the things that I heard when I got clean was, don't get into a relationship for the first year. And I was like, what do you mean? Well, don't get in a relationship for the first year. And I was like, is that in a basic text? Well, no, it's not. Well, then why can't I do that? Well, you can do that. But it is in the basic text that relationships can be a cause of great pain. You know, and what I had to realize was that I didn't even know Lou. I didn't even know who I am. What do I have to offer somebody else except sex? That was it. You know, and relationships don't live on that. You know, so I spent that first year just being friends. You know, and I said, well, I remember asking my sponsor, well, what about sex? And he said, well, I said, you're a man. You have to make that decision yourself. And what I found out about that was that I could get away with sleeping with somebody one time. But if it went more than one time, one of the two of us was in a relationship. So it was a lot easier for me to just not do it at all. And I got comfortable with that, you know, because I was still a little uncomfortable being around women, you know, and I was also taught by my sponsor to leave women alone because they needed to be able to recover too. You know, and we can't be each other's higher power, but that'll happen. And so I was comfortable with that. I was able to learn how to develop a platonic relationship and a friendship with a woman with no sex involved. And that was so cool. I'd never done that before. Didn't know how. You know, and I remember I had, I guess 15 months clean, something like that. I had 15 months, I don't know about that. And I went to a meeting, and I was sitting in that meeting, and I'm a people watcher. You know, I like to look around, and I like it. And then I saw her, and I was like, oh my God. No, actually, my first thought was, oh no, 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 no. And so I quit looking at her. And I couldn't stop looking at her. And then she caught me looking at her. And our eyes clicked, and that was it. You know, but she's the first woman I have ever developed a relationship and a friendship with before we slept together. And I found out later, you know, I didn't even kiss her for like 6 weeks. And that was huge for me. And she probably was wondering what the hell's wrong with her. You know, and like I said, I had 15 months clean, and I think she had 3. A lot of recovery there. But you know, I believe today, and I know today, you know, that God chose her for me. You know, because we're still married. We'll be married 23 years this December. You know, and I just knew it was that thing, just like Ryan was talking about when he introduced me. It was just, I knew. You know, my sponsor used to tell me, Lou, quit looking. God's gonna, when it's time, God will put you right in front of her. Or put her right in front of you. And he did. You know, and we went through, of course, well, When we got married, she had gone back out again a little bit, I think. And when we got married, I had, I think, 17 months clean, and she had 65 days. And I found out later, some years down the road, that they had a lottery. Some of the guys, people in the fellowship had a lottery going, and how long we were going to stay together. Well, you know what? Nobody won. Stephanie is the part of me that's always been missing, you know, and she's my everything. I couldn't do this life without her, you know, and of course, it's like any relationship, it's difficult. I had to learn that I have to give more than I expect to get, you know, and I try real hard to do that. You know, do we fight? We argue? Of course we do. We're human. And on top of that, we're addicts. You know, when we first got together, we became each other's higher power, like I was talking about. She was my God and I was hers, and that did not work. That was painful. That was real painful. You know, and unfortunately, she doesn't have as much time as I do. You know, we had to go through those periods of time when she used. And, you know, the last time that happened, you know, I remember my sponsor, I took her to treatment. And I my sponsor asked me, he said, Lou, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. There's nothing I can do. The only thing I can do is focus on me. And I got to let her be her. And I got to let her do her recovery. And that was the first time I was really ever truly allowed myself to do that, to let go. You know, and not only did that help her, but it helped our relationship. Because she has her recovery and I have mine. And, you know, and I realize today that the way that our marriage works is I have my life. I have goals and things that I need to accomplish and things that I need to do for me. She has the same, and that's for her. And what we have together is what we share. You know, and she's my biggest cheerleader, and I'm hers. You know, and there again, that's a God thing. You know, unfortunately, and I thank God for you, and I love you. You know, unfortunately, I don't hear enough about God in meetings today. And I miss that. I heard a lot of it when I was first coming up in recovery. You know, and I don't know why that is. And you know, I have been called an NA Nazi. You know, because I speak my mind when it comes to people bashing the steps or bashing the traditions. I don't stand for that shit. I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. Okay? And I'll cut somebody off in a meeting. I don't do it too often, you know, but I'll do it. You know, and I have had some younger people not like me much for that. And you know what? I'm okay with that today. It used to be all about me pleasing you and making you happy and making you, I wanted you to like me. You know, bottom line today, I don't care if you like me or not, but I love you anyway. Yes. I love you anyway. Was I getting a signal there?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Wow. Been that long already, huh? Like I said, you know, I didn't know what I was going to share, where I was going to go with it, but God knew. You know, I woke up real early this morning, earlier than I normally do. The itty bitty shitty committee woke me up. Okay, and had some good friends of mine pray with me this morning. And I had butterflies until I walked up here and stepped up here and opened my mouth. And then God took over. You know, this has been an incredible weekend for me. I've never been to a convention quite like this one. And I'm so grateful. You know, I live every day in gratitude. You know, it says in the basic text, a grateful addict will not use. You know, and I do not want to lose the spiritual connection that I have with my higher power today. And for me, when I used, that was the first thing that left, was my spiritual connection. You know, and I've dealt with a lot of guilt and shame, got a lot of trauma in my past, you know, but God's got me. And I'm good with that today. You know, I am so good with that today. You know, my I guess my four-word mantra or five words, it is what it is. Okay, that's the mantra that I try to live by today. It is what it is. And I'm going to share a couple more things and then I'll be quiet. The farther I am away from the last time I used, the closer I am to the next time. I'm in the footwork business, y'all. I'm not in the results business. My only job is the footwork. The results are up to God. And I'm going to close with this. My favorite sentence in the basic text is on page 90. No addict who has ever completely surrendered to this program has ever failed to find recovery. I love you guys. Thank you.